Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Taste Radio, the number one podcast for the food and beverage industry. I'm editor and producer Ray Latif, and you're listening to episode 210, which features an interview with Annie Chun and Steve Broad, the co-founders of Annie Chun's and Gimme Snacks. Tune in on Friday, April 24th for episode 82 of Taste Radio Insider, when we sit down with Lee Robinson, the executive leader for dairy and beverage at Whole Foods Market. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, we'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. After building one of the most successful ethnic-themed packaged food brands in America, Annie Chun and Steve Broad set their sights on disrupting the snack category with seaweed. The co-founders of Annie Chun's, a brand of Asian-inspired noodle bowls, soup bowls, sauces, and snacks, Annie and Steve grew sales to $15 million annually before selling the company in 2009 to South Korea-based CJ Foods. 3 years later, the entrepreneurial bug bit them once more, and sensing an opportunity to adapt a traditional Korean snack for an American audience, they launched Gimme, a brand of dried organic seaweed snacks. Committed to sourcing sustainably grown organic seaweed, Gimme helped pioneer a new segment of Asian-centric, better-for-you brands in the snack aisle, and has established itself as the leading company in the burgeoning space. In the following interview, I spoke with Annie and Steve about the origins of Annie Chun's and its evolution from a farmer's market brand to one distributed in grocery stores across the country. They also spoke about lessons learned from their first venture and how they incorporated those into Gimme, and why they continually evaluate the brand's positioning to appeal to American consumers. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm on a call right now with Annie Chun and Steve Broad, the co-founders of Gimme Snacks and Annie Chun's. Annie, Steve, how are you?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. The sun is shining. It was a vicious rainstorm yesterday, and I'm happy that we're past that. Did you have a rainstorm in your neck of the woods?
No, we've had sunny weather here. Fortunate.
Where are you calling in from?
We're in Marin County, just north of San Francisco.
Ah, fantastic. And that's where your first brand, Annie Chun's, was founded, right?
Indeed, at the Marin County Farmer's Market.
Yeah. Annie, could you tell us a bit about why and how you launched Annie Chun's?
Well, I guess that was 1991. I did not have any grand plan. I was just in a place where I was tired of working for companies and trying to make career as an immigrant. And then I saw the opportunity. So I just jumped in and changed that. And that was to go to farmer's market and start to sell my sauce. And had never had a grand plan about like, well, I'm going to grow this company really big. Never crossed my mind. I just was happy doing something that I was following my heart. So cooking was always, you know, pretty easy and fun for me since I grew up with a mother who was wonderful, wonderful cook. So I went out with two types of sauce, fresh Thai curry and Thai peanut sauce. At that time, I wanted to do Korean food, but we did not have enough audience. But Thai food was coming around in 1991. So little did I know that I was jumping into something much more complicated, you know, to grow the business. But all I thought of was that I was super happy following my heart, doing the things that I wanted to do, being around people in outdoor market, selling my sauce. So I was keep doing that. And that led to one after the other, one after the other. And, you know, that led it to be what Anychan is today.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in 1991, we didn't see many ethnic food brands, ethnic packaged food brands, and particularly Korean-themed packaged food brands or Korean-centric food brands. I can imagine how challenging it was at the outset. But how did you get people to understand, number one, what the food was, and number two, how to use it in their kitchens? Because I'm assuming you're essentially using the sauces to cook at home. I mean, it's not like something that you'd use with a hamburger per se.
Right. So that was a good learning experience for me. But the thing was, I had a chance to talk to consumer one and one by selling each jar. So I was making the sauce that it was very friendly, user-friendly, and ready to pour. And surprisingly, the consumers who were shopping at local farmers market had a very open mind, and they were so willing to try something different. And they thought it tasted great, and it was very healthy and fresh. So I had a good jump start with that. And by doing that, I was learning, okay, I need to come up with a recipe, variety of different recipe, how they can use to more sophisticated cooking, to simple cookings. So my true experience was just by following my heart, something that I felt comfortable to do and not be afraid to go out there and start to meeting people, exchanging ideas, and just learning and adapting and growing at the same time.
Now, you said more people knew about Thai food at the time. How did that affect how you communicated the brand and the positioning of Anychan's?
Honestly, while I was in farmers market, I had no clue how I was going to build the brand. But later on, I learned from consumer that people do like ethnic flavors. People do like simple, healthy ingredients. They wanted to make a change. They wanted to feel like they can cook friendly Asian food without having to go to a restaurant. So Anychan became more of a pan-Asian flavor. Like I say, I wanted to do Korean food, but I knew that I wasn't going to sell much bottles. So I started with the Thai food. Then I introduced something kind of like Japanese flair, which was my family recipe called the shiitake mushroom sauce. So one by one, I was layering off, like, I guess, my new experiment, like what people might like and how easier to use. More people would like this flavor, not as esoteric. It just went on like that.
A lot of brands start at the farmer's market, and you do have a captive, loyal audience a lot of times from folks that you can connect with on a one-on-one basis. It's a little bit more difficult when you're scaling and trying to get on shelf at retail chains. How did you make that jump, that initial jump from farmer's markets to retail?
Yeah, we first realized that there was some strong demand at the farmers market. We started doing multiple farmers markets through the Bay Area. And that was our initial course for the first couple years. And then in March 1994, we did our first fancy food show. So we had four sauces by then, and we had gone to a food technologist to make sure they're shelf stable, et cetera. And at that show, actually, we had some great response, Marshall Fields, Wild Oats, Safeway in Alaska, even American Airlines in Dallas-Fort Worth was, you know, we were shipping glass jars of gallons of mushroom sauce. And then the following year, in fact, we won first place at the Fancy Food Show for outstanding, healthy, nutritious product. And that was a period where the health food was really starting to have a big uptick. So the fact that we were sort of making all natural Asian flavors, and as Ann noted, the genesis from the farmers market was with Thai food because that was kind of an early trend. And then it slowly kind of started to convert to more of her family's background, which in fact, her grandparent mother had been one of the first women of Korea to be educated in Japan. So a lot of Japanese influence played a role in their family. And you know, that became some of the genesis of our best core flavors eventually, like miso and udon and teriyaki. You know, early on, it was just sort of hand to mouth and learning as we go. But we got a lot of press and a lot of great response. But again, we were not flush with money. In fact, we had to, you know, borrow the first $10,000, and then it was a constant like that. So it was a lot of hand to mouth and not with big funds. And we were, you know, pretty tidy, but always, as Ann mentioned, kind of always been innovating. For example, at the farmer's market, she used to serve the shiitake mushroom sauce on rice noodles. And so we, at one point, looked to import those rice noodles from Thailand, but it would have been requiring buying a whole container for like $20,000, you know, way too much money. But we were at one of the fancy food shows, I think, in 96, and serving on rice noodle. And this Chinese gentleman came up to us, and turns out he had a factory in LA, and he had the idea to bring rice noodle machine to the US, which was kind of the first time the Thai rice noodle was made here. And then Ann had the idea, why don't we flavor the rice noodle? So in addition to original, we did a Thai basil flavor. We had a chili Hunan and a mushroom garlic, I think, flavor. So we kind of had this whole concept of sort of like the Italians back in the history, they had the pasta sauce and the spaghetti, and then they made it easy for everybody to kind of make pasta. And that was our concept. We had the bottle of Thai peanut sauce and the rice noodle, and everybody could make pad Thai or something. And so that was sort of became part of the theme of making Asian food more convenient. And it was at a period of time when the specialty food and the natural food started to merge, because back in the day, specialty food was very specialty and natural food was kind of very hardcore. And then slowly there became this blending where specialty food crossed over, and the quality of the natural food in the natural food stores was starting to ramp up, which now we see, you know, them being very gourmet, even while they're natural compared to the early days.
Once you got into places like Whole Foods, did your positioning have to change? Did you have to adjust how you were communicating the product and the flavor names to an audience that may not have been as familiar with Asian cooking and Asian ingredients?
Absolutely. In fact, Ann was always very sensitive to that. So we kept it, you know, to more like soy ginger or peanut sesame, kind of more common garlic scallion, for example, as opposed to calling out like specific Asian cuisine names. And then eventually, and this was even 10 years later in the early 2000s, we finally went to a packaging designer and kind of really started to put out a proper brand look. But that was 10 years later. So it was a lot of small steps over a long period of time.
Were you comfortable with taking those small steps? I mean, Steve, you talked about starting with $10,000, which, you know, doesn't really sound like a lot of money to start a company, especially one that's been as successful as Annie Chun's. But when you are taking those small steps, was that intentional? Or was that sort of just driven by the fact that you weren't necessarily looking to take on a lot of money and a lot of debt or give away equity in the company?
Well, as noted, that $10,000 was borrowed. So we started from the borrowing position, but it was kind of a twofold thing. I think first it was our own sort of not knowing exactly how it all plays out. So kind of, you know, step by step that way. And secondly, I think also the consumer public wasn't necessarily ready en masse for what we were doing. It's kind of ironic because some of the products like aseptic, the Tetra Pak Asian soup, like miso udon, which we were the first to do Asian flavors globally. And now, you know, we've noticed last year at the expo, you know, now there's several companies doing Asian flavors. That's like 15 years after we did it. So we were kind of way ahead of our time. And that's when you do need actually funds to be able to wait till the consumer public also catches up. Or in these days, fortunately, with the whole social digital, you know, there's more chance to connect quicker than I think 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah. And, you know, when we talked last, you know, in our pre-interview call, one of the things that was really interesting to me is that you said that a lot of decisions were driven by survival, that there wasn't a lot of room to test and learn. There wasn't a lot of room for errors. You know, how do you run a company, frankly, when, you know, you're not really sure that a product is going to work, that you just have to go to market with what you have?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, the background of our company had been sort of very direct to consumer, first in the farmers markets and then in starting with stores doing demos, you know, even around the country. So you kind of get to see a lot from, you know, interacting directly with people. And then, yeah, I mean, another point was the fact that we're married and we have two children and, you know, our children were small and grew up. And so they were, you know, maybe our second and third babies. No. But so we were doing this whole family thing along with business. So that kind of was, you know, some of the dynamic that we faced. And fortunately, we have supportive family on both of our sides to allow us to get out when we needed to. But I think Anne, from her experience, having immigrated here and then done a lot of, you know, different jobs, including in retail, and started to really sense like about the American consumer, and then had a really kind of unique and amazing way of sort of taking some of her authentic and cultural experience and then translating it into what the American consumer could relate to. And I think that was just, you know, fortunate that we had that base. You know, there was a lot of learning. As I mentioned, we started with sauce and then we got into the noodle. So, because the thing about sauce is that it could take a consumer how many days, weeks to finish a bottle. So then we had the noodle to kind of pair it off. And then the big hit was when we put the noodle and sauce together in what we called a meal kit. And that's when we also did our rebrand in 2001. And that exploded relatively. And then we went into, as I mentioned, the aseptic soup, Asian flavors. And that was a certain success with the retailers, but not commercially because the consumer didn't know what to do. But that led to our noodle bowl where, for example, Anne did a couple key things different. One, in Asian culture or in Japanese culture, you don't really have noodles with miso soup, but we put the noodles there to kind of give more of a meal effect. Typically, miso is made with bonito, but Anne had the idea to want to make it vegetarian and therefore use like shiitake mushroom and kombu, which is a seaweed extract to help build the flavor and still have a very complex flavor. And I think that was one of our hallmarks, is that the flavor and the quality was so great for bottled food and packaged food. However, that also definitely affected margin. And that's one of the biggest learnings I gained out of Annie Chun's, was the fact that margin is so important. And it's really hard. In fact, you can't survive if you don't have a relatively good margin.
How do you balance the two? You know, this need for exceptionally high quality when it comes to ingredients and margin.
Well, that's an interesting point. And I think it becomes part of a company philosophy, because certainly a lot of our competition was of significantly lesser quality. But when consumer maybe doesn't know what to expect, they don't know what good quality is. And they were, you know, had a lot of success as well. But I think what defined and what's extended the brand for now 25 years or whatever it's been, and it's still on shelf compared to a lot of other competitors that were much bigger, I think that kind of base quality. So from the quality, it's really not necessarily the high, super high incremental cost, but I think that's where operational efficiency becomes so important, because ingredients is one component, but the operations is so important as well. And that was some of our challenge, because we'd have multiple vendors and we did want to make our sauce in USA, not in China or Thailand. So that added to cost. And then the kind of noodle we used, which was like a fresh but shelf-stable noodle, was made, we found, in Korea. So we were importing and then assembling in the U.S. And that became a very extended and expensive supply chain. So that's where the margin thing gets hit so much as opposed to ingredients.
It sounds like it was a grind to scale and to develop Annie Chun's. At the end of the day, you built a very successful brand and one that it sounds like you were pretty happy exiting. What got you back into the business with Gimme Snacks?
Well, I guess we did have success, as you note, and more than kind of financial success, it was commercial success. So at the end of the day, you know, we were still not so old and, you know, looked to work and just felt that for what we do, kind of being an entrepreneur is kind of where the comfort zone is.
When you sold Annie Chun's, you know, did you feel like there was an opportunity to do something that you hadn't been able to do with that brand?
Probably. I think that there was probably maybe a certain sense of unfinished business because the fact that we were so resource constrained with Annie Chun's and I mean, part of the reason we went to sell was because, you know, at some point, you know, financial resources are needed to grow a business. And at that time, and maybe, you know, there was probably far limited sources compared to this day and age where a lot of private equity has now gotten involved in the natural space, but that was a lot less so 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
When you decided to launch Gimme Snacks, how much more preparation did you put into business planning as opposed to what you did with Annie Chun's, which sounds like just, you know, get out there, get into the farmers markets and sell?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, far more, you know, from having a proper supply arrangement and agreements and doing the proper trademark work and doing the proper branding work. And yeah, all those pieces that we had no idea in the beginning what to do with Annie Chun's and learned along the way. Of course, we could, you know, utilize that knowledge and experience to execute so that we build the proper infrastructure to grow a bigger business. Because at the end of the day, it starts with your base and you build up. And if your base isn't proper, then you're going to have to go rebuild that base before you can really get to the next level.
So you launched with seaweed snacks, which isn't the most easily understood snack or food in the United States, at least. Why did you decide to go with that product as your initial, as the initial product for Gimme?
Well, the main reason was we were innovating and we were the first to pioneer organic seaweed snacks. So prior to what we did, nobody had the USDA organic seaweed snack. So that was important. And then second, we were innovating with products. So not only did we do the organic seaweed, but we also created a product line called Crumbles, which sort of helped us out in the beginning. And it was a different species of seaweed. And we did a honey Dijon and a cheddar cheese flavor and a teriyaki flavor. And in the beginning, actually, the retailers all didn't take Gimme, even if we were the first to be organic. And we were also non-GMO. But because they said, oh, we have seaweed snacks, they're all selling well. But they said, oh, we need more, so they took our Crumbles. And then the following year, Whole Foods had made a declaration to be non-GMO in 5 years. And then the buyer also emphasized to his regions that, hey, this is organic, non-GMO, we should do this. And kind of the rest is history. Once we got on shelf, because of our focus on quality, again, it really, the consume, and also we made the packaging not Asian. We just kept it light and friendly and a little more futuristic. And sort of the combination of the brand and the quality has propelled us to the leadership position today.
Annie, Steve mentioned that you were better prepared this time around to launch a food brand, a packaged food brand. At the end of the day, did you feel like your preparation was enough to limit the mistakes and limit the pitfalls that came with your first brand, Annie Chun's?
Of course, but as much as we had an experience with Annie Chun, this was, working with the CV was completely different thing. It was whole new learning experience that in terms of business and distributions, operation, we already had a lesson behind that we were able to make the stride and eliminate the mistakes. But anytime you're entering new experience, you are also facing big challenges. So I have to say, in some level or many levels, we have learned so much more and different experience through this second business.
What are some of those lessons that you learned this time around that are distinct from your first brand?
The fact of the matter is, with Annie Chun's, the food was relatively more processed. When you're making sauce, when you're making noodles, that's basically processed foods. So it's easier to keep a tighter specification. But when we're dealing with seaweed, it's very minimally processed. So it's all about that raw material. So the way we achieved it, and we were very fortunate in the beginning to partner with basically the largest seaweed company in Korea. And they had a lot of contacts and they nurtured their relationships with the farmers. And it's all about what the farmers are doing in growing the seaweed and where it's grown and the water temperature and what time of the, because the seaweed grows in the winter from December to March.
It's interesting you mentioned an acquired taste, because when someone first encounters seaweed snacks, when I first encountered seaweed snacks, I really didn't know what to make of them. I wasn't sure if it was something that I was supposed to eat because it was better for me, or it was just fun, or if it was, there was a specific flavor that I would appreciate. How do you sell the products? How do you position seaweed snacks? And is it different than when you first started? Is it about nutrition? Is it about fun? Is it about flavor?
Yeah, I'd say it's about all of those. And additionally, I think it's about discovering new experiences for the consumer, and that seaweed can be a whole new world for people who just can't imagine. And interesting enough, it can become an acquired taste, because sometimes it doesn't necessarily hit somebody right off the bat, but slowly they integrate it. And if you start to use it, incorporate it into your food, you can put a little rice or cheese inside the seaweed and roll it up and eat it. And different ways, avocado. I mean, there's a whole range of uses beyond just eating it straight. And the key for us is that, you know, because of our focus on quality, our seaweed doesn't come off fishy taste. And that's what can really turn off consumer, is when it has a little bit fishy kind of sense, which it can.
I would assume that would turn off a lot of mainstream consumers. Mainstream consumers aren't necessarily looking for fishy tasting snacks. So when you are innovating and when you are thinking about expanding the line, is it really just about appealing to your base, or is it first and foremost about appealing to your base and then potentially expanding to more mainstream focused consumers? Or when you do innovate, are you really looking to go beyond that base and reach folks that are not as familiar with, say, a seaweed snack?
Yeah, I would say that it hopefully serves both. I mean, I think in terms of our base, I mean, we're far from capturing all the potential consumers we could be. But as well, I mean, the goal is to try to expand and compete against other mainstream snacks. And I kind of view it the way Glaceau had Smart Water, then they created the Vitamin Water, which became much bigger, but now people have realized that, you know, they're still taking in some sugar, and they've now, Smart Water is so much bigger. So I think with seaweed, if we create those more mainstream products like a Vitamin Water, that eventually people will move back to the lowest calorie, cleanest, most nutritious form, which is the seaweed snack.
Well, Steve and Annie, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing the history and the strategy behind creating two really outstanding brands. I remember when I first encountered Annie Chun's, I thought, wow, this is exactly what we needed, because as you noted, there was nothing like it on the market. And I think it's the same thing with Gimme Snacks too. I as I mentioned, was a little skeptical about seaweed snacks. And ever since, now I've been a fiend when it comes to eating seaweed snacks. So thank you so much for being pioneers in our food industry and for, you know, leading a new generation of brands in this amazing space.
Great. Well, thank you
so
very
much for your time.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of episode 210. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guests, Annie Chun and Steve Broad. You can catch both Taste Radio and Taste Radio Insider on tasteradio.com, the Apple Podcasts app, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.